The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend engineer. He's my friend. He's my engineer. He's my producer, Mr. Bob Dio, on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for this Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. Bob, I'm playing trombone here with these papers in front of me. I left, unfortunately, both pairs of my glasses at home. They're sitting on the counter right now. So luckily, I carry a Walgreens / CVS type glass in the car for such an emergency, but it's not really very good for reading. So I'm, you know, struggling a little bit with that. But who needs to read? I just can ad lib the hour. I think I can handle this on Buckmaster here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have, of course, that's our website, all of our live listening there, and KVOI.com. Our podcasts are available for you 24/7 at BuckmasterShow.com. The live line number 790-2040. Speaking of the live line, let's go to the Arizona State Capitol in Phoenix. State Senator Dave Bradley. David Bradley representing the Tucson area. Senator Bradley is also the Senate Minority Leader. Senator Bradley, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about this session. We are, give or take a few days, about 3 months already into 2019. What's been accomplished? What have the marquee items been that have been accomplished so far?
Well, yeah, this is our 93rd day. In theory, we're supposed to be out of here in 100. We're not going to make that by any means. So, you know, we spent the first portion of the session on the water issues. And I think we, with the plan that we came up with, which was accepted by the feds, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that was, you know, if we had a crowning achievement for the session, that was probably it so far in terms of coming together, both parties and the governor's office as well. Since that time, you know, we've some 1,600 bills probably got dropped. Maybe 600 or so were processed. There's probably 300 or so bills that will ultimately make it to the governor, and the governor will probably veto 15, 20 of those. So that's typically what happens. And so, you know, but we have yet to deal with the main reason that we are sent here, and that's the budget. I don't see an end in sight in the short run. the governor has put out a budget that is actually in many regards very good. We have some, you know, we as Democrats have some concerns about it. We're not sure what the Republican members of the legislature's concerns are, but we're trying to get through that in the coming weeks. But so, you know, again, the main accomplishment would be the water issues. The rest of it is, you know, I can't think of like we've been able to stop a few bad bills, the gun, from our perspective anyway, for the guns and the parking lots for schools, and then you know, for people who pick up their kids with a loaded weapon, and so that bill was stopped in the Senate. What people refer to as the no promo homo bill was passed as a function of the Attorney General not wanting to fight the lawsuit that was put up by the LGBTQ community relative to AIDS instruction in schools, which was in place since 1991. So that has been overturned. And so we were very grateful for that happening. That happened just last week. And then the other bill that was getting a lot of attention was the change in the minimum wage for younger people. And that bill was also stopped in the Senate.
Now,
as well,
Senator Bradley, as I recall, and I've been around in the media here 31 years, it used to be the budget was presented perhaps earlier on in the session. I think you remember maybe these good old days. Then there were hearings into all sorts of items that were in the budget. Then we kind of had this kind of adoption in the middle of the night. That sort that's been going on now a couple of years. I don't know when that first started, but it just doesn't. It doesn't sound. It's just not transparent. Why can't we go back to have, you know, let's present a budget and then let the people have some say onto this subject?
Yeah, I think you know the governor did present his budget early on. It's usually the first Friday after session starts, and that did happen. What used to happen is that the legislature had either a counterproposal or at least a budget of its own that was presented usually 2 to 3 weeks later.
Right.
And then in the course of hearing other bills, there would be time set aside for, you know, budget issues in the more distant past before even I got here 15 years ago, 17 years ago. There were subcommittee hearings on the budget all the way during session, and then towards the end, everything was brought together. So that has ceased happening for quite some time. What will happen in this instance is that at some point, either starting either in the House or in the Senate, that a budget will be budget bills will be dropped. Usually, when that happens, a bunch of deals have been made prior to that. That either in accordance with the governor's office and sometimes in opposition to the governor, but usually in accordance with. And then that's the opportunity for people to have some input, but it usually is fairly limited, fairly rapid. You know, you're talking about a $10 billion budget, and we ram it through in 3 days or whatever, 4 days, whatever the time frame is. And it doesn't obviously let people either, you know, just process it. I mean, it's a huge document, and just trying to understand what's in it. Members struggle to have it, and we have people that help us get through it. So for the general public, it's, you know, 10 times harder to get, you know, what's really on page, you know, 222, line 7, you know,
right,
that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm with you. I wish we would take more time to vet it, but Every year is a little bit different. This year, you know, the governor has, again, put out, you know, a fairly reasonable budget in many respects, but there's disagreement about the amount of money that he wants to put in the rainy day fund from both Republicans and Democrats. And there's some other issues that I think the legislature is probably in agreement with, but in opposition to the governor's office.
Still, it's hard to judge how long this session might last, isn't it?
Yeah, at this point, I also compounding it this year is that the House is so close. It's 31-29. So when the majority, the Republicans, are missing one member, they stop action. They just stop it because 30 votes does not get you there. You have to get to 31.
Yeah.
And so when they're missing a member, they just stop. And so as you may have heard, you know, they had to basically have one of their members resign, and that was all drawn out. They're at full staffing now, but nevertheless, if one person's sick, then everything comes to a screeching halt.
How are the Senate things seem to be a little more cordial than in years past, would you say?
Yeah, generally speaking, I think that's true. Our numbers are the same as they've been for the last at least 4 years, I think, or 6 years maybe, 17, 13. But there is a difference. You know, President Phan is a different person than President Yarbrough or Biggs were. And she and I are, you know, friends, you know, fairly close friends as well. And so we've tried to take advantage of that relationship in terms of how we the decorum of the Senate is tends to be a little more cordial and a little more peaceful. And we jokingly refer to the Senate as the library and the House as the playground. But that's because we're snooty senators. But
what still needs to be done about the taxes? People, you know, we're now beyond tax day, and we'll have to see how it sorts out. What's the bottom line there, David Bradley?
Yeah, the conformity issue is really what's probably the biggest thing holding up the budget. The governor was presented with a bill that 45 of 46 Republicans voted for, and he vetoed it. And that tells you that he was very adamant that he wanted the conformity bill not to have reform in terms of either rebating the money. The theory is that because of the federal tax changes, that the state will inure some benefit somewhere between $80 million and $250 million. I've never that's the range that you've been hearing about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that it's probably in the 170, 180 range. But the governor in this budget year wants to use that money in ways that his Republican members in the Senate and House do not agree with. And then going forward, wanting to have it's called conformity, that the tax policy and of the state and the federal conform. And then there's the reform part about it. And so the reform is where the money that in theory the state would be inuring or getting as a function of those changes, that some people believe that money should be rebated right away. Other people, believe that it should be invested in the 10 years that we've let things go in the education and transportation and healthcare, all those things.
Going to have to wrap it up, David.
Yeah, that's the root of the problem.
State Senator David Bradley, the Senate Minority Leader, thank you very much. We'll talk with you again before the session's over. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
We are very excited to announce, drum roll, if I had it, I would give it to you. Breakfast will be served. We now have a date. Mona's beginning on Friday. Oh, my goodness. Friday the 19th. That's this Friday. Mona's will be open for breakfast, and they're going to be open on Easter Sunday until 1. They're going to offer an early bird special, 6:30 to 7:30, 2 eggs, bacon, and toast. Oh, my goodness, toast, Bob Dio, on that great bread. $4. That's going to be the early bird special. And then, of course, they're going to serve breakfast all day and lunch, of course, every day. So Mona's, they're going to have a signature French toast on the challah bread. Boy, that's going to be really good. That's going to be kind of their signature breakfast dish. And, of course, Mona's home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's Danish Kringle, and, of course, Northeast Corner, Swan, and Sunrise. Mona's DanishBakery.com or a link at BuckmasterShow.com. Be right back with Shelley Fishman from Amsterdam. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to JamCulinaryConcepts.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And certified financial planner Shelley Fishman also happens to be an avid traveler, as am I. And right now he's with us on the live line. He was with us in Amsterdam last Tuesday, and he is still in Amsterdam, but he has done some very exciting things over the past 7 days. How are you, Shelley?
I'm well, Bill. What's the weather like in Tucson?
The weather is pretty darn good. Maybe 70s, 80s, but maybe mid-90s by the end of the week. And again, Shelley, as I said last week, are you sure you're not in the other room under Bob Dio's table? Because this is a fabulous telephone line that we've got going here.
I'm pretty sure. I think I'm on the Viking Sky, which is the boat, of course, that got in trouble a couple of weeks ago off the coast of Norway.
Yep.
I can tell you that there are very, very few signs left on the boat that there was any trouble at all. And seeing a boat this large and with so much, you know, glassware and stuff that could just get into a lot of trouble when it starts rocking back and forth. It's amazing that they were able to get the boat fixed up and cleaned up and ready for a cruise such as the one I'm on now. But it's just a wonderful experience and a kind of a privilege to be here. It is a time when I didn't expect all of this excitement, quite frankly. And none of it really positive when you take a look at what happened yesterday in Paris and a couple of weeks ago on the open seas. But the Europeans are nothing if not resilient.
Are you sailing tonight, Shelley, and where is your destination?
No, we're sailing actually tomorrow afternoon. We go up through the Kiel Canal, we start off at Hamburg and then to Kiel, and then we wind up going through Denmark, up to Norway, and then back, we wind up in Copenhagen. So it's about 10 or 11 days, and some cities that I've been in, some I haven't. But it gives you, there's about 900 people on board. This is not a river cruise, this is an ocean cruise. And so you get a chance to speak to a lot of people, both on the boat who are passengers, and of course, I seek out people on the street in restaurants and, just people who can comment on what's going on. And what's amazing is, number one, the lack of reticence about just talking about the things that are affecting the world, both politically and economically, but also the strength of feelings. I've been traveling around the world for a long time. I don't think I've ever seen the kind of feet in cement arguments that you get now, both in the States and here in Europe.
Shelley, sometimes waiters have wonderful opinions too. Not only the people at the restaurants, but I'm sure the waiters have some opinions about Brexit and everything else, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's nobody that you can talk to who doesn't have a strong opinion about what should happen, what should have happened, how it should go forward. And that is kind of, again, it's a change for me. I mean, you know, people are always opinionated, and they should be opinionated. But But when I put two or three couples together in a little group today, and the three couples were all Brits, and I said, well, what do you think about Brexit? You know, where are we going here? And the first person to speak up, you know, basically said, we voted on this. The democratic process worked. The politicians are trying to upset and reverse that democratic process. We need to leave the EU now. And, you know, the other couples were like looking, not surprised, but wondering just how strongly to, you know, give opposite opinions. And then one couple did kind of just begin to say, look, it's not clear that this process included the kind of information we all needed before we took a vote, and maybe another vote would be a good thing, to which the first couple just went, you know, nuclear on us. You know, no, the democratic process is what it is. So the feelings, even among, and I'm going to say relatively affluent travelers, the feeling is very, very strong and hard to kind of get people to back off a little bit from their positions and have productive conversations about middle grounds. So what I'm understanding now a little bit better than I did a couple of weeks ago was just how tough a job the politicians are having in trying to balance the very strongly held positions of their constituents against perhaps what they might evaluate to be the political and logistical realities.
So,
Shelley, just from my own perspective, from an economic perspective, the idea of the EU leaving, or rather the UK leaving the EU, just makes no sense at all. But, you know, that is not something that is shared by certainly, you know, the majority of people I've spoken to.
And the Brexit has been extended into the fall, correct?
Yeah, happy Halloween. It's been extended to the 31st of October. Lots of jokes about that. There are many people who believe that's not long enough, and a whole bunch of people who believe that's far too long. If Mrs. May and her government can't come to some sort of compromise position, then this could go to that moment, and we either ignore Brexit completely, in which case a lot of people would be relieved and say, well, just let it kind of go away on its own. And others will say, we just have to crash out of here and take whatever happens. So we're no closer than we were a couple of weeks ago. I tried to fix the problem for the world, but nobody was listening to me, Bill.
There you go. Shelley, I bet you've got a very international group on board the Viking. You've got 900 people probably from all over the world that will be sailing with you tomorrow.
Yeah, a bunch of Brits, lots of Americans. There's a whole contingent of Asians. They kind of came in a separate group. There seem to be, you know, maybe 30 or 40% of the population and of this, you know, of this particular cruise. And one of my objectives is to see if I can, you know, find a way to communicate with people, you know, whose center of orientation is not necessarily Europe and America centered.
All right, Shelley, we want to wish you all the best, and you'll be sailing tomorrow, and I'm sure the weather will be very seasonable. We can say that.
Well, you
right?
know, we've brought it from the desert with us. It mm-hmm. hasn't rained a drop since we got here.
There you go.
And it's not scheduled to for the next couple of days. So keep your fingers crossed.
Enjoy Norway and the fjords. It's going to be just so beautiful. Shelley, have a great evening. Well, it's almost time for bed. Have a great evening. Okay. Shelley Fishman with us from Amsterdam. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Shelley Fishman, Certified Financial Planner, with us on the Buckmaster Show from Amsterdam.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of Securities America or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor in private practice here in Tucson. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through PFG Advisors. Securities America and PFG Advisors are separate entities.
This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You know, it's only a 3-hour drive to this beautiful portion of the Land of Enchantment, the southwest portion. And so that's not too bad. 3 hours from Tucson, and you're in a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for a complete listing of the many great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Coming up next, our newest contributor to the program, the Reverend Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, our contributor on faith and spirituality. He's on the live line. He'll be next right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This portion presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, the 13-acre site home to Zocalo now and all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Come tour the 5 shops at Zocalo Village. More at greenthingsaz.com. This is Holy Week, Easter weekend coming up, Good Friday, this Friday. For our Jewish friends, Passover begins on Friday. Our newest contributor is one of at least now 24 contributors to this program that we are so honored to have with us, Reverend Robert Hendrickson. He's the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. Father Robert joins us now on the live line. Father Robert, how are you?
I'm great, and it's a gift, as always, to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Boy, what a What a horrible start, the world being shocked by the pictures, the images that we saw from Paris coming from Notre Dame. I mean, it was just really horrible. I guess the good news is that the folks there at Notre Dame formed a human chain, if you will, to get some of these priceless early Christian relics out of the facility to safekeeping.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch. And I think my mind and my heart sort of immediately went back to 9/11. You're just watching this thing unfold that you don't understand. And Notre Dame is one of those places where when you're there, it feels like the entire earth is sort of spinning around you. It just has this kind of magnetism to it. And so to watch that unfold, the Guardian newspaper in England said that it felt like the soul of Europe had been ripped out. And that's what an impact it was having. But then, like you, I watched that human chain. I watched people singing the Ave Maria together outside, and watched the kind of passion that people had for it and the outpouring of both grief and love for the place. And it felt to me maybe like the soul hadn't been ripped out, but it was being revealed again, even in the midst of a tragedy, seeing all these people come together.
And, you know, in some ways, what we saw happen was kind of like a reawakening and somewhat of a positive message of the way Holy Week ends, correct, Father Robert?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I couldn't help but think about that. I mean, literally, the gospel on Palm Sunday, you hear, the temple was, the temple falls, and so to sit there the next day and watch this magnificent temple sort of burning, you think, and you think about the experience of Jesus's disciples in this week. The crucifixion happens, and then it's 3 days before they know there's another end of the story. And so I think people in the midst of that grief and that sort of outpouring of sorrow are just sitting there sort of bewildered in their grief. So it certainly does feel like a kind of physical manifestation of the story we're all entering into again this week.
What message are you conveying this Holy Week to your parishioners?
You know, my message this week is to embrace the resurrection and embrace life. I mean, there's a line that I use a lot from St. Gregory of Nazianzus, who says that the glory of God is the human being fully alive. And it feels to me right now that a lot of people in our culture either don't really know how to live, and I mean that our relationships seem to be fractured across differences of all kinds. It seems like we don't have a common story and sense of who we are as Americans or as Christians or as believers of any stripe. And it's feeling to me like something is off in the deepest places of our culture. I mean, since 2006, teen attempted suicides have doubled in 12 years. We are now at the unhappiest we've ever been, sort of in Gallup surveys, we are now recording as the unhappiest we've ever been. And so it feels to me like something is off, and it feels to me like people have to recommit to live lives that are truly alive and have to recommit to connecting deeply with their own spiritual life, with God, with one another, and to do it in a way that honors the gift we've been given as we Christians receive it in the resurrection. And sort of to not just say, oh, what a wonderful thing that was done for me, but to say, now how do I respond to this gift with all that I am and all that I have?
And is it typical that Passover coincides with Easter week, or is this just a coincidence, Father Robert?
It's a coincidence, but it's a coincidence that happens with some frequency. But it's always a gift when it does, because you get to share this holy time with Jewish people as well.
Can you explain to our listeners? I had some questions about this, about why Easter falls like this year, very close. I mean, late, and then we've had some other years where it's very early. Could you explain why that happens?
Yes, the date of Easter fluctuates every year, and it has to do with lunar cycles and other things. And so there's a whole sort of complicated mathematics to it, and there are full moons. It's related to full moons, equinoxes, the March equinox, and then there's something called a Paschal full moon, which is an Easter full moon. So it is a really intriguing kind of fluke of our history. But I don't think it's a fluke at all. I think what the earliest believers did is they were trying to figure out, how do I situate the date of this kind of cataclysmic thing, and this thing that kind of changes the world, the resurrection, how do we figure out what to celebrate? Well, we're going to tie it to lunar cycles and to the cycles of the whole universe. So there's something very deeply, it's kind of primordial about how it's fixed. Now, other traditions have a fixed date of, they have the date of Easter fixed. but we are part of the Western tradition that has it pegged to lunar cycles.
We're speaking with Father Robert Hendrickson. He's the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. Father Robert, what have you learned during this Lenten period for yourself personally and for your lovely family?
Well, I have learned one thing, and that is difficult. You take on all these sort of practices where you're trying to be a little more, you know, restrained in your habits or kind of abstemious. And I've learned that that's harder when you have toddlers. your desire to not have chocolate or not drink is pushed to the edge by children every day. So I've learned that as they get older, it's not getting easier.
Yeah, and you posted on Facebook that you were working on your Palm Sunday sermon quite late.
Yes.
On Saturday night, when one of the little ones, your two beautiful boys, one of the boys became ill, but luckily rallied for Palm Sunday. But still, it made for a late night for you.
It does that, and that's the danger of being a procrastinator like I tend to be is that when something comes at the last minute, you're sort of pushed by the Holy Spirit to improvise in ways that you're not always comfortable with.
Have you thought at all about what your message will be on Easter?
Yeah, I think that I really do want to spend time with people talking about the kind of life they want to live. And you know, I'm doing the children's sermon, and one of the things I'm looking forward to is asking the children, what does it mean to be alive? Because we learn so much from children that adults forget too easily. And so I'm looking forward to hearing their answers of what it means to be alive, and then talking with the congregation about how they can sort of live into the kind of joyfulness that children see in being alive that we sort of, I think, forget too easily.
You're planning a trip to the Holy Land, is that correct?
Yes, we leave in early May.
So I will not be talking to you on the radio because then we're going to be gone off the air here. Well, I'm not going to be off the air. We've got some great guest hosts lined up, but I will be personally in the West Indies for almost three weeks in May, and we'll be talking after your trip to the Holy Land. You've been to the Holy Land how many times now?
This will be my fourth time. I'm sure if it's fourth or fifth.
And will there be another tattoo in your future?
Probably. It's become sort of a part of the ritual of the thing. There's a the place we go. You know, they've been doing this since the same family for 700 years has been doing this. And so I think King George had them, and King, Prince Edward, and so that it's part of them, kind of all the way back to the Crusaders, frankly. But part of the tradition was to arrive in Jerusalem and get marked in some way or another. And so I've fallen into that habit.
All right, Father Robert, we're going to let you go. I know you're busy. You're up on church business in Phoenix, correct, today?
Yes, we have what's called the Renewal of Vows Mass, so we all come and bend the knee to the bishop for another year.
And refresh our listeners, refresh their memories about, does every day now during Holy Week, is there a different name for each of the days? What do we have coming up?
Sure. So Monday and Tuesday are just called Holy Monday and Holy Tuesday.
Okay.
Wednesday has the creative name Spy Wednesday, which is about, it harkens to Judas's betrayal. And there's a beautiful liturgy called Tenebrae, which is this chanted liturgy by candlelight that's just glorious on Wednesday night. And Thursday is Maundy Thursday, Maundy from the word mandatum, which is Jesus gives us a new command that we love one another, and you celebrate the institution of the Eucharist, of communion, and with the foot washing, where that's the symbolic act of serving and loving one another. And then Friday is Good Friday, where we engage the story of the Passion. And then Saturday is Holy Saturday, and we have the Easter Vigil that starts at night as it goes dark. And you make a big, giant bonfire and celebrate the resurrection and eat chocolate and try and get some sleep before the next morning.
Yeah, it's gonna
then we have something like 42 services on Sunday morning. So.
Oh. I'll probably be at one of those for sure. All right. Father Robert, thank you very much. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you so much, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right. Father Robert Hendrickson, he is the Buckmaster Show contributor, one of our newest contributors. He is our contributor on spirituality and faith. We actually added two new contributors this year. Jeff Silvertooth is our contributor on agriculture. So we've added a couple of new categories to the Buckmaster contributor list. All of their bios listed at buckmastershow.com, including a lot of links to our great partners like the UA College of Science and Biosphere 2. And speaking of that, that will be our next interview, talking about what's going to be going on out at Biosphere 2 as we celebrate Earth Day this weekend. We will be right back on Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The following segment made possible by UA Biosphere 2, where science lives. Find out more about UA Biosphere 2 at biosphere2.org. Joining me in studio, and this is his first visit, not to the Buckmaster Show, but his first visit to our new studio, still relatively new, kind of has still that new car smell. John Adams is with us. John, how are you?
I am well, Bill. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Yeah. So how do you like the new digs?
These are really nice. Quite an improvement. So.
Yes, it is.
Not that the other ones were bad,
but
these are very
nice. From the linen closet, it's a step up. John Adams is the Deputy Director of Biosphere 2. For two decades, John has helped drive the evolution of Biosphere 2 through positions of progressive responsibility and oversight. Since 2014, John has been responsible for planning and directing on-site operations and under-the-glass activities that set the vision for public outreach. I want to talk a little bit about Earth Day. Earth Day officially is next Monday, but it's certainly a great time. I guess you could celebrate, John, Earth Day every day, couldn't you, at Biosphere 2?
You could, and we like to say that every day is Earth Day at Biosphere 2 because everything that's happening at the facility centers around understanding the implications of these changes we see coming our way and how they're going to impact the resources that each of us are so dependent on.
When you started really in the business and associated with Biosphere 2, people weren't really talking about climate change or global warming or really the problems that our Earth is facing. So in many ways, the whole Biosphere 2 concept was ahead of its time.
It was absolutely ahead of its time, and it's remarkable to see how the facility has transformed. And really now, with the University of Arizona, has repositioned itself to, I think, fully take advantage of this remarkable facility. I mean, remember, this was a private investment by an individual, and the dollars that are out there is about $200, $250 million that somebody spent to build it. And now we have an opportunity to use it in the public sector.
And people thought it was just a crazy idea. I remember covering those early days and the whole concept of the biosphere to biospherians being, you know, locked away in this environment. People just thought this is really crazy, but now it all kind of makes sense.
Well, you hear about it in so many contexts today. So we hear about it in understanding Earth systems, but more broadly, you know, we hear about folks like Elon Musk and he wants to put, you know, a couple million people on Mars here in the not too distant future. You know, that was sort of what Biosphere 2 was themed, to understand how we can take these systems that were so dependent here on Earth, bottle them up and use them to balance an atmosphere. Because right now, the only way we know how to do it is typically using different types of chemical reactions to balance the production of oxygen, the uptake of CO2, and to provide an environment that's suitable to produce agricultural crops for our nutritional needs.
It's almost like it is a living laboratory, and I enjoyed our conversations that we had with Laura Meredith, who is her specialty at Biosphere 2 is the rainforest, and Diana Thompson, her specialty is ocean. And both of those areas are just really cornerstones in understanding climate change. Hopefully during the summer, I can rerun those interviews because those were great conversations about what they're doing to kind of, well, like I say, a living laboratory.
Well, it is. It's probably one of, if not the largest living laboratory. And we're different than a typical botanical garden that you might find at a zoo or other parts of the country and the world in that we don't manicure our systems. But now you as a researcher can come in and crank up the temperature, decrease the moisture, change the atmospheric composition, and in part look at how the system responds, which hopefully will give you a better insight as to what's happening outside. And that's it. It's really a key tool in the researcher's tool belt to understand what's happening around us.
I know you've been very involved with getting the message of Biosphere 2, and it's a message that's been picked up by the BBC. It's a message that overseas people have learned about, and I know you have a lot of guests that come from overseas. But what about local people who have never been out there? This might be a great opportunity this weekend to check out what you're doing.
Well, it's a great weekend. So for many of us, it's a holiday weekend. Mm-hmm. If you're celebrating Easter or other activities around
that. A lot of people will be off on Monday.
Yep. Monday, and some folks off on Friday as well.
Right,
so
right.
This Saturday, April 20th, we're going to be doing some things. So we're going to have beach tours. So that gets people down onto the beach. So you heard a little bit from Diane Thompson. Mm-hmm. But as part of this, we are revamping that ocean system. And a key part is introducing invertebrates. So we're going to have the public help us introduce blue-legged hermit crabs and some emerald crabs, and we're going to do those at 11, at 12, at 2, and at 3 p.m. And you can sign up for those when you come in and go through admissions.
These are certain crabs you're going to be introducing?
We are. So one of the things that we're starting with is our ocean right now resembles an ocean that you would likely see into the future. So we've got a lot of algae, and so the question is how can we restore it? Mm-hmm. So our research team is looking at the steps that are crucial and critical to do that, and part of that is these things that we often don't take much notice of, but are vitally important to help break down, eat up that algae, and start recycling a lot of these nutrients so that things like corals can reestablish themselves.
You know, I'll be heading off to the West Indies, got a great trip planned in May, John Adams, and one of the problems they've been having down in the Caribbean, just huge influx of seaweed. And this is happening because the water in the Caribbean is warming so that some of these beautiful million-dollar beaches down in the Caribbean have just been inundated with seaweed.
Well, and that's a challenge that we're seeing worldwide in a mm-hmm. lot of these coastal areas, and in yes. particular those coastal areas that harbor corals.
Right.
And so these increases in temperature really cause the corals to get stressed, and in some cases results in their mortality. Mm-hmm. And so at Biosphere 2, we've got a team that's been put together of international folks who thinks we're one of the only places that you can do some tests that you can't do anywhere else, because we can change the temperature. But then what we're hoping to do is understand why certain corals are able to survive, and then take those traits and hopefully be able to capitalize on them so that we can then give corals outside of the natural environment a greater probability of surviving these warmer temperatures into the future.
All right, so you've got the crab release coming up on Saturday. What about what else is going on?
What else is going on? So we've got some folks from the Marine Awareness and Conservation Society. They're going to be out there. We've got some folks from the university and the bioengineering club that will be out there. And so these are great groups to interact with. We've got a great group of folks that provide information regularly about Biosphere 2, and you can ask them a whole suite of questions. And if you can't make it out this weekend because you've got family mm-hmm. activities, mm-hmm. you know, next Saturday would be a great weekend to come out as well. So we're going to focus a little bit more next weekend on the history of Biosphere. So we're going to open up one of the apartments, the library. We've got a director's tour, which really gives you wow. an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look. And so all of the information pertaining to these can be found on our website at biosphere2.org. I encourage anybody to go there and get that information. And then, you know, come on out and visit us. We're open from 9 to 4 every day.
Tell me about the apartments. This is where the original group of Biospherians lived.
It is. I mean, for many of us, even me included, you know, our first hearing of Biosphere 2 was this idea of these eight people being yeah. sealed inside, like you mentioned.
Right.
And so what we've done is we've left one of the apartments as it was for historical interpretation. But in addition to the apartment, you can see the kitchen, the dining area, because people are fascinated by the human dynamic side of this interaction that these folks had when they were living inside Biosphere.
Yeah, and I think as the years go by, we're even more fascinated by it. And I'm trying to recall there were two groups, right?
That's correct.
John Adams, what were the length of time for each of the
stays? So the first group went in September of 1991. There
okay.
was eight people, four men, four women, and they were sealed inside for 2 years, and they made it the full 2 years.
Wow.
Then they had a short, if you want to call it, intermission. And then another group, this time of seven, went in, but they were only in for about 6 months.
Right.
And then that is when a strategic shift in how Biosphere was viewed and going to be used, from moving away from people living inside to using it as a research tool.
Right. And why did that one end early, that group? There were issues, if you were to put it politely.
Well, so there was a change in management philosophy and direction.
Right.
And so the original one of the original founders of Biosphere 2 began to look at different ways of using the facility. Some folks from Columbia University, a guy by the name of Michael Crow, who you probably recognize his name,
ASU.
Yep. Yeah. So he was at Columbia, and they really saw a unique opportunity from a scientific perspective, and they felt the science that could be done in there, more importantly, focused on understanding these different types of cycles rather than having people live inside.
So simply put, it went from originally a private enterprise, then to academic with Columbia, then to the University of Arizona.
Yes. And
is that correct?
That is correct. And the university now, in July of this year, will have owned the facility for 12 years.
Wow, 12 years already.
Yeah. And in fact, the U of A is the longest running manager owner of the facility out of anybody prior to this.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure it's a huge task when you have to clean all the glass.
We do, and we're getting ready to do that again.
Oh,
so
boy.
Anybody wants to come out and help us, we'll sign them up.
There you go. John Adams, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. And again, the website is
biosphere2.org.
Great activities coming up this Saturday and next Saturday as we celebrate kind of Earth Day month. Let's put it that way. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
That's going to do it for Buckmaster today. On behalf of John Adams, my great producer, engineer, Bob Dio. Coming up next, Steve Rivera, the very popular sports show host that we have here from 1 to 3. His show is Eye on the Ball. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.